Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it.
Black, white, right, left.
Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Welcome once again to Whiskey Congress. We are in studio together drinking a new whiskey. We are drinking Weller Special Reserve. Steven, good to see you again.
Good to see you too.
And what do you think?
So this is, we had the antique.
The 107, yeah.
Yep, the Weller Antique 107 was at a couple weeks ago. And I think I told you that I like this a little bit better. And the reason why is, I mean, the whiskey profiles are very similar. But that 107 is just, it comes through a little stronger. That 107 is your proof on it. And so this Special Reserve comes through at 90 proof. And so it's a little bit smoother. It doesn't pack quite as big of a punch as the 107 initially, but it's just smooth all the way out. It's also a weeded bourbon, which is just, you know, a little bit different than a lot of the other bourbons that we drink. And it really just, I think from a flavor standpoint, it comes through really well. And for the price,
I forget what I paid.
Less than $25.
Yeah.
The only issue with this bourbon,
it might have been 21,
is that it's hard to find.
It
kind of comes and goes in waves.
All right.
And because of the price, people want it. You know, you buy it, you drink it because you're like, oh, it's only $25, and you go back out to buy it again. And it's not there because everybody's rated it.
Right.
You know, or people are hoarding it, like myself, because I think I have 3 bottles of this at home with 2 antiques.
Well, in that case, I was about to say the bastards, but I mean the fine people who...
Right, no, I'm one of those bastards. But I think actually one was a gift, and then I bought one, and then one was supposed to be a gift for someone else, and then someone else pissed me off, so I'm drinking theirs. That's a true story.
The ultimate form of retaliation from Steve.
Right. So for this one, I give it a 92.
Okay. I only gave it an 89.
Ew, you're gross.
It just, I mean, it's good, don't get me wrong. 89 is no slap in the face of the score. I don't know. I just, I like it. That just was what it tasted like to me. That's all I can say.
Oh, that's fair.
All right. So, today was an interesting day.
Big day.
Roger Stone has been arrested. Now, so, I had mixed feelings about the actual the raid that took place. Because CNN was apparently the only media outlet that was able to get there on site for the raid. They claimed that they were not tipped. It was just good journalism on their part.
It wasn't hard. Everyone knew that there was grand jury activity yesterday. I mean, there were a lot of talks about that this was coming yesterday and last night on, you know, whether it's satellite news stations and all your Fox News and all that stuff. So it really shouldn't have been a surprise that this raid was coming. And I think it's not, if you know where Roger Stone lives, then, you know, you post someone up there. The fact that no one, you know, Fox isn't going to do it. Right, like Fox isn't going to be there. Why? Because, I mean, they're pro-Trump. So anything that makes Trump look bad, they're going to sprint the other direction as far as possible. MSNBC, they're too busy doing whatever they do, you know, fanning each other's queefs. So, I mean, I don't know. I hate MSNBC. I think it's a lot of garbage journalism over there. Not that CNN's really that much better. I think all 3 of your major, whether it's CNN, MSNBC, Fox, they all put it's all opinion-based crap. You know, I mean, like, you just cannot get away from the spin with any of them. And I think in this particular instance, I mean, it was pretty easy to figure out what was coming. Now, you know, in terms of them, you know, CNN actually being fed a tip, I mean, you can never...
Who cares?
Who cares? You know, yeah. I mean, who actually cares?
The point I was going to make is, they're showing the footage of it, and, you know, the FBI is there, you know, tactical weapons drawn. I mean, they treated this like they were, in, you know, raiding a drug sting.
Well, and, I mean, the concern is the loss of evidence, right? Like, right. When you go in like that, the main point is to preserve any and all evidence that you can. And, you know, people are like, well, he's not a flight risk, and, you know, he's not going to shoot anybody, and he said he would go in with no problem. Yeah, maybe. But now we trust people who've been indicted by the government. Now we trust, I mean, well, you know, those same people who are defending, who are saying Roger Stone is being treated unfairly, and I'm not lumping you into that category.
Okay.
But those are the same people who, you know, will defend the police and go Blue Lives Matter on you the instant that anything happens to anyone that they're not sympathetic to.
And the FBI has training and
right,
and,
they have, and they have protocols.
And their protocol is probably when you're doing this sort of thing,
right,
you've got guns handy, you've got...
He's a high risk target. Not that he's a flight risk. Not that he's someone's who's gonna come out shooting. But he is someone who may be trying to destroy evidence, giving the charges that are being levied against him. And so to do that, that's how they go in. That's their protocol. A lot of people don't like it. Well, they're doing their job.
They're doing their jobs.
You know, I mean, and it's funny because you got a lot of your pro law enforcement people who are just beside themselves are like, how could you treat an American citizen this way? Like, listen, the dude walked out. I mean, it's not
and
like...
And was free by lunchtime.
Like, they startled him. You know, I mean, like, that's how... I mean, that's how these things go. You know, I mean...
That's a shitty start to your day, though.
Oh, my God. It's kind of terrifying.
Oh, boy.
Could you imagine... I mean, just coming out... Either coming out of a sleep or taking a shit or whatever you do, in the morning. You know, I mean, just lights... Guns, loud, if there's dogs, like, I mean, I can't even imagine what that would be like. You know what's funny? Chad Ochocinco is Roger Stone's neighbor, and he said he had never seen anything like it. I actually tweeted it.
I had no idea.
Yeah, I put it on our Twitter account. He said that he was just like, man, they came in and got my neighbor Roger Stone. I never seen anything like that. I thought it only happened in the movies.
Oh, my goodness, that's so great.
It was great. And then it's just like, you live next to Roger Stone? My God, like, we...
One of these things is not like the other.
Right, but I mean, who knows? In that neighborhood, you know, if Chad Ochocinco was there, Terrell Owens could be there. You know what I mean? I mean,
Shaquille.
So.
No, they're not. They're in Southern Florida. They're not in Orlando.
I don't know. I have no idea where Shaq lives. Did you?
He used to live on a golf course in Orlando. Yeah, I don't know where he lives now. Probably in L.A.
So I just saw that Shaq has actually said he's going to be running for sheriff.
That's not shocking.
I know. I mean, he did law enforcement. Yep. He did law enforcement here. He went on a raid of a child porn ring here in Cleveland, and you want to talk about a bad day getting raided and then having Shaq kick in your door. Like he literally blocks out the sun. So
I think Shaq should try to work undercover.
Pretty sure.
You look just like Shaquille O'Neal. Yeah, I get that a lot.
Right. It'd actually probably be a funny movie.
Or a terrible movie.
Right. Or a terrible movie that I would enjoy.
There's that. So that was a big deal. Government shutdown ended today, sort of. It's over until February 15th.
Well, hold on. I don't want to brush over the thing with Roger Stone.
Okay.
Because this matters in that the reason why is because a lot of it is tied to WikiLeaks and the information that was leaked and, you know, his connection to the Trump campaign and Trump administration and mostly the campaign. And was he facilitating the use of this information from a hack server to use in the campaign? And all that sort of is connected to this whole thing. And where Trump continues to get himself, he continues to trip a little bit, I think. And maybe he's doing it on, you know, maybe it's a crazy like a Fox thing or whatever, but he continues to throw out there, no collusion, see?
Right.
Biggest witch hunt in the world, see? You know, I mean, and the thing is that, listen, yeah, whether there's collusion or not doesn't really matter because that's a word that's been co-opted by the media as just their term for his relationship with Russia. But in reality, Mueller's building a conspiracy case against Trump, right? Like, you can see it starting to come together. And the conspiracy is a real charge. And with so many pieces starting to fall into place, it's going to be... You can see where it's starting to take shape. Now, ultimately, you're going to need a smoking gun to tie it directly to Trump to get him on those charges, right? Like, because right now, it's all circumstantial. It's all the people around him, right? But that's still not necessarily enough to go after Trump, which is why I don't think you've seen Mueller do that to that point. Will he? I don't know. I don't think so. But it's amazing because you read these indictments and you realize how dumb some of these people were, whether it's Manafort or Flynn or Stone in this case. Like, I mean, Stone wrote an email threatening a guy's dog Like, I mean, or I think that was a text message. Some of the stuff that he said, I mean, making the Godfather 2 reference to Frankie Five Fingers and how the guy should testify. You're like, you're putting these things in writing? You're putting these in emails and text messages? Like, what the hell is wrong with you? So I still contend that there may be one or two other dominoes to fall. You know, maybe they get something on Donald Trump Jr. I don't think that it ultimately will feed up to Donald Trump to where you'll see some sort of impeachment process or something along those lines. I just don't see it happening.
It won't happen. Even if the House votes to impeach him, the Senate will never convict him.
Right. Everyone knows that. Unless, again, it's just so blatant. You know, there's a recording or there's some, you know, just something so over the top that it can't be ignored. Then I think things change, but maybe. I mean, that's a lot of ifs and buts and candy and nuts.
I'm about to be stupid. I tried to record this and I fucked it up, but I'm watching CNN and the reporter saying, Roger Stone heard the indictment read to him, said he understanded it. I'm like, a national fucking journalist that understanded?
Hey, listen, when you talk for a living, it's easy to trip over yourself. I have a friend
who... And only a dick like me.
Right, I have a friend who worked in it and who worked in TV and news and stuff like that. And she, you know, she kind of got after us a little bit because, you know, I was so against the guy who called Martin Luther King a coon. Because it's one thing to say understood it. It's another thing to call Martin Luther King a coon by accident. Sorry.
Okay. We've been through that and... I find it hard to, you know, necessarily attribute malice in that case, but it's
crazy.
Dude, it hit you hard. And again, when I said that, I didn't know that a common racist thing was to call him Martin Luther King. So to me, it was like, why would that happen? And I think your point is, if you say it all the time with your boys at the golf course, then, right. You know.
I mean, I just...
Yeah, no, I understand. Like, this is where being a white guy, it doesn't set off a nerve for me nearly the way it did to you, and you've... To a degree, change my mind. I mean, I'm still not sure that you should get fired for that with you know one strike policy. But you clearly,
I disagree.
And you clearly disagree. Okay. Anything more on Stone?
No. I mean, we'll see where it goes. I mean, I think this is one where it's important to watch the trial because this is clearly going to trial. He's not going to play.
I think we pardoned.
Maybe, but I think it's worth it to watch the trial simply for entertainment value.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I think
one thing Roger Stone is entertaining.
Right, the dude is wild.
He walked out doing the fucking Nixon thing,
and it's like, what are you doing? And then, like, he shares an apartment, like he with a mistress in New York, like it's crazy. And like this whole thing with him threatening the guy's dog, and making
the Frankie Five Angels reference,
right? Making that reference, and then the guy who has the dog is like, he like carries this little white dog around in like a cage everywhere he goes, and. I guess he's even had it with him in court before. So, I mean...
Roger Stone does.
The radio guy in New York. It's just wild. So, I just think it'll be entertaining. It looks like... I mean, it's an indictment, so we'll see what comes of it. But, I mean, I think it'll just be worth watching. To just like, what is going on? You know?
Yeah. and like you said, it will be entertaining.
Right.
So if you're going to pardon President Trump, do it like mid-trial so we get the entertainment.
Well, I mean, I think you'd have to wait.
I'm joking anyway. Yeah, I'm just being stupid. So the shutdown is temporarily over. The government has been reopened until February 15th. I have some pretty strong thoughts about how I would feel about this if I was a federal worker. Let me throw to you first and see what your thoughts are, and then I'm going to go on a rant.
Well, mine aren't so much from the viewpoint of a federal worker, although... I have multiple friends who are federal workers, and they were really put in a compromised position. And a lot of people are saying, well, they only miss one paycheck. And that's fine for you to say, but you can make the argument that they should save their money and they should be better with their finances. All right, fine, you could say that. But either way, the reality is a lot of these people were not in a position where they could really afford to miss that paycheck, and for them to miss a second paycheck really would have put them in dire circumstances. Do I think that for some people, do I think that the media took liberties to, dramatize this?
Of absolutely. Course.
You know, yes. People miss one paycheck and now they're eating out of food pantries.
Right, and rationing their insulin.
Right. Listen, if you're out of insulin and you didn't get paid and your benefits didn't get paid, insulin is expensive. I know firsthand.
Yes, you do.
And depending on what your plan is, I mean, or what type of insulin you take, it can be very expensive. And if you miss a paycheck, you may not have the money. And think about it, it's early in the year. So do you have flex spending?
Just got through the holidays where people tend to blow a bunch of money.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of different variables out there. So I don't think you can underestimate the idea of a person missing a paycheck. And if you can afford to miss a paycheck, good, great for you. But there's a pretty big percentage of people in this country, federal workers or not, who if they miss one paycheck, it sends their whole world in flux.
It's one of the reasons I love living in Cleveland is it's so damn cheap here.
Right.
One paycheck doesn't take up my entire mortgage.
Right, it doesn't necessarily end you. Mortgage, right.
Did you hear the comment from Wilbur Ross, by the way?
Yeah, that was pretty,
So basically he said, well, these people have jobs, they should be able to go out and get loans. I don't even want to put that much on this guy. He's the Secretary of Commerce, and it just shows how out of touch government is with people.
Why is that a good idea? So,
right. Take on more debt.
Right. You're not getting money in. Take out more debt. You'll start getting money. And then
take
you
on more debt. It works for the government.
Right. That's just a crazy way to think. I mean, the last thing I would be thinking in that scenario is to take out a loan, unless it got to a point where I had no other choice.
Right.
Right. But I mean, the scary thing is, are you driving people towards payday loans? Right. With 300% interest.
Which is basically, what are they called? Usury, right? I mean, it's literally taking advantage of the poor who need to make things work from day to day, which whenever you see a paycheck cashing place or whatever, what neighborhoods are those usually in?
Right. but, I mean, so in terms of the shutdown, I think that it's interesting the timing, right? Like, you have all this stuff with Roger Stone come out, and then the same day that he gets indicted and ends up, in front of a judge, all right, let's put an end to the shutdown. I don't think that's coincidental. I don't think that's the sole reason behind the shutdown coming to an end. But obviously, I feel like there is a connection. Let's take a little bit of heat off of that. Let's get some good press out there. This is the ultimate good press. And so I believe that is part of it, in terms of just kind of a deflection. The other part of it is that Trump finally realized that he was in a no-win situation.
Right.
Any political clout that he had built up was evaporating and may be gone. And he realized that he had lost. I think ultimately when he had to cave on the State of the Union, he thought he had won up Nancy Pelosi. And then right at the last minute when they're going through their walkthrough, she's like, you're not doing that. I think he realized that he was at a disadvantage.
It's when you're in that chess game and you just realize, oh shit, that's the winning move and I can't stop it.
Right. Like you hear check and then your heart starts to flutter. And I think what comes of this though, the other part is, and I just played it for you before the show.
Right.
Trump finally comes, and I've said all along, this is about semantics, right? This is about how you say it. This is about how it gets addressed. So he's talking about this bill that he hopes that Democrats and Republicans can come to him with, that he'll sign, that's for border security, that's, yes, a lot of it's for wall, but a lot of it's for technology, and that it's not going to be a 2,000-mile-long border. Now, his words, we never asked for that. Bullshit. That's why we're here.
Donald. Right.
But, and part of the reason why I say bullshit is I've said all along, it's not a 2,000-mile, it's not going to go across all the way across, right? I got into it, and I said that border security is all-encompassing, right? Like, we have natural barriers, so why do we need a wall where there's a mountain that no one can get over, right?
And that's what I've been saying.
Right?
It's stupid to try to make a coast-to-coast wall.
But again, we've heard it from multiple people in the administration. It was never going to be a wall, but he got it in his head that because he said the word, we're going to build a wall, Mexico's going to pay for it,
right,
all that shit, he had to throw it out there, and he wouldn't back down off of it based off of just how it was being presented. And finally, he realizes, listen, I am getting my ass kicked here, and I've got to bend it. So now he comes full circle with, this is what it is, right? This is what it is. This is what we're asking for. And I've said all along, like, if he would have done, he could have done that and taken a victory lap 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, that's the rant I was going to go on. Is if I'm a federal worker, I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? My life has sucked for the last however many weeks. Was it 6 weeks? No, it was 3 weeks.
No, I think it was. It's 34 days.
So okay, right.
Whatever. But I mean, right? Like, yeah, I mean, their life really got hard because they got paid right before the new year, and then the shutdown goes into effect, and then you're working basically for free for 2 weeks,
right?
And then you don't get that check, and it's like, ugh.
Right.
You know, and then you've got another 2 weeks, and they literally come up to the day you're supposed to get paid. So they're still not. They're not going to get paid today, I don't think.
I can't imagine they will be.
Right.
So we heard in Trump's speech, as soon as possible, very soon. I'm
forgetting. Right. He said very soon, as soon as possible, or right. Whatever. But you know, I mean, and that's the frustrating part, and I think we agree that we could have figured this out a hell of a lot sooner. If you know, I mean, listen,
he played chicken with someone else's life and lost.
Right. He lost.
But now the next game of chicken starts leading up to February 15th.
And I have to come clean. You know, I am not a fan of Nancy Pelosi.
You've made it abundantly clear.
She's grown on me. And I think that, you know, previously
on Whiskey Congress,
the position that she was in, you know, Speaker last time, I mean, we didn't really, like, she didn't really need to flex her muscles all that much.
Right.
And in this particular time, I mean, this particular instance, I mean, she stepped up immediately. I mean, I thought she was 100 times more effective than Chuck Schumer. Like, I can't stand to see Chuck Schumer at the podium. I hate the sound of his voice.
Again, you've made this abundantly
clear. Right. I mean, you have to say that, listen, Trump stepped into a ring with someone that I think he thought he could bowl over. And from the beginning, she's like, you don't know what you're up against. And there are people who will defend Trump and say that he somehow won because in the end, he's going to get his wall. And okay, fine.
And he never really wanted the whole thing.
Right. Okay, fine. All right, fine. You whatever you got to do to lick your wounds to get through this. But this is one that Trump takes a loss. You know, yeah. I mean, he takes a loss. You heard a lot of people over the last month unnecessarily when we could have been here. You know, he makes this concession, you know, for the good of the people, like, just so people don't have to miss a single check, right? If you care so much about the people, then we should have figured this out to the point where, we should have figured this out where, which he put this in front of him on day one, you know, the day that they went, January 3rd, you know, she puts this in front of him and, you know, he's the one, no, I'm going to own the shutdown, the whole thing. And now here we are.
Yeah. And, you know, another thing from the perspective of these workers is, as bad as everything was, there was also that element of uncertainty. Like, you know, all right, as much as it's tough for me to do this, I don't know when this is going to end, if it's going to end before my resources run out.
Right.
So when you don't know what you're planning for, it's that much harder.
Right. And that's a great point. I mean, and that's something that we were, you know, where I work, I'm looking at it, and we're trying to figure it out. Now, the reality is, we're in a situation where there's a February 15th deadline,
right?
Of, you know, getting a budget through, and, you know, funding the government for another extended period of time, and we don't feel comfortable with that deadline at all. So today, at about 3 o'clock, you know, we have an emergency meeting, and we say, what can we get done between now and February 15th?
Your life probably becomes hell for the next couple of weeks. Yeah,
it does, because I mean, we were just stuck in a state of limbo. You know, for the last month. And so now, and we had a lot of things ready, but there's just so much that we couldn't do until we knew what our time frame was. But now that it's here and it's not, you know, and they didn't come to a long-term agreement, like, we have a very small window to get a lot of work crammed in and submitted to HUD and hopefully get something back from them, so that our deals can go through. So that uncertainty is still there.
Sure, but now this is even worse for someone in your position, because you have now a deadline that may or may not be
critical.
Incredibly powerful, right? So you've got to sprint as if that deadline is everything, and then they could move the finish line three more weeks down the road, and you don't know it. But
in that I would rather, and this is, you know, my point today that I made in the office was, we have no choice but to go into this, like, we have to finish before, yes, like, February 14th. Valentine's Day, we have to be done.
The St. Valentine's Day Massacre.
Right, I mean, and that's exactly, I mean, that's the reference that I made, because otherwise, February 15th hits, and the guys in Washington don't have it figured out, Trump throws a temper tantrum, Pelosi goes apeshit, whatever it might be, we could be back in the same position, and we don't want to have any stragglers. So we have to go in and get everything wrapped up. We have to be very mission-oriented until that point, and then hopefully we can get it all where it needs to go, and then cross our fingers and hope that things work out the way we need them to.
You know, February 15th is going to be interesting, though, because Trump, like you said, he bragged and basically said, I will own this shutdown, claiming it was over national security, and I won't even go down that path. But he, you know, said, I'll own this shutdown. He ultimately had to own the shutdown because everyone heard him say that. And no one's going to want to own another shutdown in... I mean, I liken this now to like a work stoppage in a professional sport. It's like, right, the owners do it, the players do it, they fight. And then eventually the people who, you know, are watching say, fuck you. You guys are elitists, whether you're elite politicians or elite athletes. And, I mean, it nearly killed baseball.
Right.
Nearly killed the NHL. Beat the shit out of the NHL, actually. Still, yeah. It's still impacting them. And so no one's going to want to own shutdown part two 3 weeks removed from this bullshit.
And I think the biggest thing to this is if they can do something smart regarding border security. Because I'm a firm believer that we do need help. We do need additional money in border security. I think that a lot of those resources should be in technology at ports of entry. Yes, build wall at vulnerable positions, but, you know, understanding that there's the border is just not this simple idea. It's a complex thing. The terrain itself is complex and difficult to navigate. The situation that you have between cartels and gangs and just people, you know, in general, like that's not, it's a humanitarian issue, and it's not as simple as, you know, well, we just have to stop them. That's just, there's right, more to it than that. And there's a lot that's going to have to go into this. And if they do it the right way, right, then, and they can get that at least in process, then I think the rest of the stuff, healthcare, all that other shit, like they'll figure it out.
Healthcare, all that other shit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, like they'll figure out a way to come to an agreement where they can get a budget through.
I hope so. And I will say that, you know, the whole fight was originally over $5 billion. And you and I had this conversation at a bar the other day. $5 billion doesn't build the coast-to-coast wall. And now that they're doing what I think is smart and using more technology, and it's, you know, physically stopping a family trying to cross a border, yeah, a wall works great. Because if you got, you know, a two-year-old kid, getting a two-year-old kid over a 10-foot wall is a real challenge. If you've got a drug cartel that wants to get over a 10-foot wall, they've got the money to burrow under it and pop up in Utah.
Yep.
And the idea that a wall is going to stop human trafficking or drugs to me is just silly, and that's why I've taken the stance I had before, because I'm sympathetic to the asylum seekers. Even if they're not... If you're coming from Nicaragua, you probably don't know the proper protocol for getting into the United States legally, so you might do an illegal thing. But I guarantee to you, if I was in their situation, I'd be getting the fuck out of Dodge and heading for the American dream that I believe in, because I don't watch CNN and Fox every day, and I don't know that we're being overrun by MS-13 and Antifa and whatever the fuck. So the people that a barrier stops are not the people I'm as worried about, but I digress.
Agreed.
All right. We could probably go on this for hours, but we got to talk about some goofy stuff.
Yeah. So
let's talk about Mike Erdl.
Can we play Guess What State This Happened In?
I'm glad I didn't say it. I almost said where he's from. Okay, so you want this or can I do it?
No, you do it.
All right, so the Secretary of State for a state served in office for 17 days when images showed up of him dressing in blackface, which we've gone back and forth on that.
He's a white guy.
White guy dressed in blackface as a woman, mm-hmm, wearing the words Katrina victim on his shirt.
Yes.
He, right, let's say, the state of Florida.
Right. I mean, he's from Florida. I mean, I, when I said that, it was facetious.
So, right, but...
I mean, dumb shit like this seems to only happen in Florida, but, you know, I mean, listen, I guess it's just so peculiar, right? I mean, that this guy, like, that is what this guy chose to dress up as. There's not a whole lot to the story because he was elected, picture showed up.
Or appointed.
Right, or, I'm sorry, he was appointed, picture showed up, like, immediately steps down, right? Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it, about how ridiculous this is. You know, and there's some people who are going to say, oh, it's not that big of a deal. Like, yeah.
So, when that girl dressed up as Crazy Eyes from Orange is the New Black, I was one of those people. She was dressing up as a TV character. I was Mr. Put It in Context, and I'm always going to be that guy. Let's put this in context.
Yep.
Because not only did it... So, other people will say, oh, it happened so many years ago. The fact that it happened years ago, in this case, makes it worse.
Yep.
Because it happened at Halloween of 2005, literally 2 months after Katrina.
Right.
It's one thing, I mean, making a joke about a human tragedy is never cool.
Nope.
But to do it right, I mean, to say they were still cleaning up the mess isn't even...
No, I mean, fair statement. They're still cleaning up the mess in certain parts of the South. So,
and so this time... Context matters, and because of the context, fuck you, Mike Hurdle.
Right.
Douchebag.
You know, enjoy your job working at Wendy's.
And another thing, it's not, like, I've seen things where people try to be funny and miss the mark. What the fuck is funny about, hey, I'm a person whose life was ruined, and I nearly died, and I had to live in the Superdome. What a douchebag.
Right.
Like, I mean, it's not fucking funny.
Right. I just, and you really got to kind of look at, I mean, listen... He resigned.
Right.
And that's the end of it. But, I mean, if this, I mean, this guy getting dragged on social media, like, I have no remorse. Like, I have no remorse.
No sympathy whatsoever. Fuck right off.
Right. Like, just fuck all the way off.
How do you, I guess, he probably didn't have control over the pictures, whatever. But when you do something so fucking douchey, you know what? I'm not going to finish that thought because there's no point.
Right? There's just not a ton to say about it. It's just so ridiculous. So, moving on. Something we didn't cover last week. I was in Vegas, and then this was kind of happening as I was in Vegas. You had the kids from Covington High School out of Kentucky,
right?
Who were faced with there's a picture that went viral of one of the kids with a smirk on his face with a MAGA hat. And he was, like, right in front of a Native American elder, quote-unquote. The elder's banging a drum. The kid's got this look on his face. And then immediately it hits the internet, and people lose their shit.
Yep.
Completely lose their shit. And this is where, again, the media loses credibility. I mean, because they jumped all over these kids the kids didn't do, like, all things considered... You have to think about, like, when you just looking at a picture, the question is, what did the kid do that was so wrong? He was standing very close to a Native American guy banging a drum with a smart-ass smirk on his face.
Yep.
Right?
Right.
It's not a crime. He didn't hit him. And, oh, it's disrespectful.
He didn't.
Okay. Like, I mean, he had a dumb smile on his face. All right. You know, and these kids, like, I mean, they took some heat. They took a lot of heat in the media, like a lot of people on the left and CNN and Huffington Post and all your, you know, mainstream liberal outlets just like went all in on these kids, and then they went the faculty of the school, and, you know, listen, yeah, they're privileged white kids, and my contention is that these kids, the only thing that they were guilty of was being white and wearing Make America Great Again hats.
Right. Now, the MAGA hats have become... fair or unfair, an offensive symbol, right? Mm-hmm. People just, you see that, I mean, I react to it. If I see someone with that, I'm gonna roll my eyes and go, you and I are probably not gonna have a positive discussion on this issue. But like you said, this kid's 16. And I hate to say this, but I'm gonna do it anyway. If you have a guy banging a drum 2 feet from me right in my face, I'm probably gonna get goofy. I mean, it's just a weird thing to have. Having a person in your face like that is awkward already, and now chanting and banging a drum in your face. It gave me flashbacks to Will Ferrell in the more cowbell thing where at the end he's like banging a cowbell in the guy's face. And I mean, that's, I know it's a silly comparison, and don't fear the reaper, but it's, but it this is a great example of a failure by the media. And I'm, in this case, I'm pointing mostly at the liberal, almost exclusively at the liberal media, because they were so eager to find a villain, they didn't get the whole story. And then there was,
I mean, they just completely butchered it.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they said that the Native American guy fought in Vietnam. Nope, he didn't. He was AWOL a lot, and he was in the military, but he wasn't a Vietnam vet, and, you know, his military record was sketchy at best. You know, they went in on these kids, and that's the part where, you know, I mean, no one who got really angry at these kids could tell you what they did wrong, other than, oh, you disrespected the Native American elder, right? Like, well, like, the kid stood and wouldn't let the Native American guy pass, but he doesn't have to do.
I don't even know if that's fair.
Well, I guess what I should say.
Impede him.
Right, like, he was standing. Native American guy is like coming through. He said he was trying to defuse the situation or whatever.
Right.
Okay.
It would have been a charge, not a block.
Right. Exactly. That's that's a great. I mean, because, you know, I mean, the Native American guy is coming at him, and so everyone's like, well, he should have turned and walked away. Like, okay, listen, he's a 16-year-old kid against a guy with a drum. There's no, you know, there's no requirement to retreat. I don't see how we ended up here to where this got blown up. And it's all because of the kid's face. It literally is, because he's just got that smart alecky, white kid face. And you know that chances are he's probably an asshole. He probably is, right?
Very like possible.
You look at him, you watch the interview, it's just like, man, you're probably such a dick. But that being said, it's just an assumption. I have no idea. I don't know if that kid, he might be the nicest kid in the world, right? He might be the nicest kid or whatever. Either way, it's all based off of how his face looked in a picture, in a situation, and because the people around him are wearing these hats. You know, they villainized
him. The hat became the...
Right, they villainized these kids over...
Seriously, if that kid's wearing a UK basketball hat, is this even a story?
Yeah, because I think so. Because
I'm thinking about
think
it now.
As I just think because you had the Native American guy is the key, right? Like I think the Native American guy is the key. He's a sympathetic figure, and then you have just the white kid represents that symbol of white privilege. And that, like, you have people on the left who are just so blinded by rage, by just any sort of the thought of white privilege has gotten a lot of liberal white people just beside themselves, right?
Sure.
I mean, whether it's white guilt or just misguided social justice, whatever it is, like, they just lose their shit anytime they refuse to look into an issue, right? So now all of a sudden, once you start to pull this thing apart, the kids are the least of the worries here, right? I mean, because we don't even know, like, the whole thing with the Hebrew, Israelite, black dudes.
What?
Like,
all right, do you know anything about
them? I don't
know.
I don't.
I watched them rant. So just to clarify, this all kind of revolves around this group of, I think they called them the black Hebrew Israelites or the black whatever.
Something Hebrews. And
but they were basically yelling Bible quotes and... That's,
well, it was more than that. They were yelling other things that were pretty
true. Pretty aggressive stuff. Yeah.
So,
what are we?
It was just a bizarre situation.
I love DC.
Yeah, it was just a bizarre situation all the way around, and I think the kids were treated pretty unfairly, and it's frustrating because now that aligns you with some people that you wouldn't always necessarily align yourself with, right? Like Dana Loesch, who's a big NRA person.
Right.
You know, she's defending these kids left and right, which I think is interesting because, they're only 16 and they're young boys. It's just like, oh, man, you went pretty hard after the Parkland kids, Dana. You know, I mean, like, so we don't forget that. And so it's interesting to see her kind of
her supporters do.
Right. What's that?
Her supporters forget that.
Oh, right. And so, and I don't really have a problem with Dana Loesch. I mean, she hasn't. Like, I think,
I think she's a
well. You
chill.
Hate the NRA.
I do.
So you're biased.
You're right.
I don't necessarily have a problem with her, in particularly. But I think it is interesting for her. Like, she went pretty hard after David Hogg, right? And you know, attacked him, criticized him.
He shouldn't have gotten into Harvard.
All those sort of statements, and now she's coming in defending this kid.
He's just a kid,
He's just a kid, right? And like, why are these adults coming after him? And that's not right, and that's not fair. And he didn't do anything wrong. Okay. David Hogg just happened to be at a school where people got shot up and died, and he says that's not good. Right. So, I mean, you know, I can get why she doesn't like David Hogg, but at the same time, like, you need to kind of check yourself a little bit. But I agree, these kids shouldn't be getting dragged through the media. Now, listen, the kid's family is fortunate enough where they were able to go out and hire a PR firm and get him on the Today Show and all this other stuff. So, I mean, he'll be fine.
Is that the definition of white privilege?
Basically.
It's rich privilege, isn't it?
It is. Because it is. I mean, that's a class thing. You know, you got money, you figured it out, but, you know.
And he's white.
Right. I mean, it just, the look. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's easy to see why it gets people riled up. But, I mean, I honestly couldn't believe how people lost their minds over it. I really couldn't.
And how people jumped to conclusions. I mean, truthfully, neither of us had a reason to be surprised. This is what's become standard. However, boy, it didn't take a lot of, you know, crack investigation to figure out what. I mean, the video was out there. If you watch the whole thing, you realize this is a much deeper story than smug kid with a smirk on his face.
Well, and then I thought, like, I had no idea what had happened. I see the picture. Obviously, there's all the outrage. You know, people, you know, someone put out a really, like, someone actually said some shit that I would say.
And they said, no.
Right. And, like, someone said something along the lines of, have you seen a kid with a more punchable face? And I initially thought, that's hilarious. And I'm like, shit, he's a kid. He's 16.
It's still funny.
It is still hilarious. But, I mean, that's the sort of thing.
You know who said that? I think Kathy Griffin said that.
No. It's hilarious. I felt bad. And then I actually had concerns. Like, is that the sort of thing that someone sees and then they know this kid, or they're able to get close enough to this kid where someone actually does something mean to him and punches him? You know, I mean, I just... And that's a legit concern. I mean, because people are fucking crazy. You know, people take this shit way too far. I mean,
Jones says shit about a child
pornographer. Yeah, and then whatever, dude walks in with a gun. Right. Yeah, I mean, like, so I did have concerns about the kid's safety.
Fomenting more and more.
You can't say this because if something happens to that kid, like, whoever says that, that's on you, right?
Right.
I mean, not really, because it's on the person who does it, but still... We have to look at social responsibility to a degree.
And what's also funny is the allegation was someone yelled, build that wall. Why would you yell, build that wall?
And that scenario makes no sense. Because they're Native Americans and black people. So you're not.
Keep those people here.
Right. Like, all you haven't. If they're your problem, you have not solved it.
You've almost welcomed them. We don't want you to be able to go.
Right.
Stick around.
Now you can't leave.
Okay, that makes it sound creepier, but yeah, right. But that's... Someone yelled, build that wall. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, which may well have happened, because people say stupid shit all the fucking time.
Again, they're 16-year-old kids, and 16-year-old kids say dumb shit.
Right.
I said dumb shit at 16. I say dumb shit at 38.
Right.
So, you know, I just... You know, and I've got plenty of progressive left... You know, friends that are, how could you defend them? Because they're 16-year-old kids. Listen, if all those boys would have jumped him and beat the shit out of him, that's a problem.
Sure.
All they did was just stand there and laugh at the guy. Sometimes you get laughed at, right? Like, I mean, like, come on, what are we doing here?
And I don't even want to go too far down this road, but they're from small town Kentucky and they're in D.C. And when you are in a place that is so, I mean. When I go to D.C., I'm in awe.
Let's just pump the brakes.
Why?
These are 16-year-old kids that go to a very, very
astute, well-to-do school.
Okay. I'm sure some of these kids have probably
okay, maybe.
Been but to Paris. Come on now.
Maybe.
Let's ease
but,
up.
But when you're in D.C., I mean, that place just
it is.
Bleeds
it's,
power.
It does.
Right?
It's awe-inspiring.
Walk down, you know, Pennsylvania Avenue.
What the hell does that have to do with anything?
Just that they're out of their element, they're awkward, and this guy banging a drum in his face, he's already uncomfortable, but anyway, it's not that big a deal to go down that road.
Yeah.
All right, so last week we talked about Officer Van Dyke being sentenced, and we did not have some information that we now have.
Right. So, so he got sentenced to a little over 6 years. And so he will be able to earn good time credit, so or good behavior credit. So essentially he'll be out in under 4 years, right around three. So it's 2019 right now. He will probably be out 2022. And
you know, I have to say this, it could even be sooner than that because you might get credit for time served if he has been in.
Right. And that, and I don't know.
I don't know either. And so, we don't need to give another update.
Right.
But dude either, could be out, I mean, in a year and a half if that's the case.
Right. So the question, I don't think, maybe it could be. Again, if they do give him credit for time served, it could be sooner.
And I don't know what his situation was. I just talked out of school, I know, but
and I didn't dig into it to the point to figure out exactly when his get out date is. But you know, he's not going to serve that full 6 years. That much we do know. And I think the one good thing that has come out of this is things happened the way they should have in the fact that you didn't see riots. You didn't see violence. You saw people who, you saw a family that felt somewhat, they felt some form of justice in the fact that he was found guilty.
Right.
And, you know, there are people who will point out that Van Dyke has a family and a wife and daughter. And so his life is screwed because obviously he probably can't be a cop again.
That's what murder does to people.
Right. I mean, he obviously can't be a cop again. I mean, although there's a couple places here in Ohio where they may hire him. That's legit.
Officer Dan Vike, you're welcome to.
Right. Well, they hired that guy that shot
Tamir Rice. Yeah.
Tamir Rice. So, like, if that guy can get a job, then I feel like Van Dyke could move here and go wherever they are. But, you know, so you look at it and you say, well, I don't know if I want to be vengeance guy, right? Like, just the, you know, right hand wrath of God. You want to move away from that because you just don't want to be fueled with anger and rage. But it's just, it's hard for this to sit right. Like, you took a man's life, and so you, as a police officer, are going to walk away from all this in 3 years. Yeah, you'll have to put your life together, but there's probably going to be avenues for him to do that, right? I mean, and you know what I mean? Like, there's
to me, this feels like a bigger punch in the face to justice because unlike these other ones where, you know, the people weren't convicted and you and I, and I certainly don't speak for myself, like in when the Walter Scott case was a hung jury, I was like, are you fucking kidding me? How could you possibly rule that? The white cop who shot the white guy in Arizona, again, how the fuck does that guy walk? I lose my mind. But, okay,
good. Because at some point in time, listen, a lot of the outrage against the way police were treating people was the fact that they were, you know, people were being murdered. And the police officer was getting administrative leave and then going back out on the street.
Right.
Right, where it wasn't even going to a grand jury. So a lot of this was, listen, there's got to be some accountability for these police officers. Right? There's got to be some accountability so that a police officer's first instinct isn't to just fucking shoot you to make the problem go away and, you know, take some time working at a desk and then, you know, getting back on the street. Right, like that's really a lot. That's where the whole thing with Black Lives Matter happened because you saw young black people being murdered, and there was no recourse for it, and it was almost like it was being awarded. And so now, at the very least, you're seeing some accountability to a degree. And the question is that enough? Right, like he was charged, he was tried, he was convicted, and he's going to serve some time.
But that's why this feels like a bigger punch in the face to me because, you know, so he didn't spit out the hook. He was convicted of second-degree murder and 16 counts of aggravated assault or whatever it was called. And even when the system doesn't let the guy walk, it gives him, I mean, certainly not a pass. I've said in our conversations on and off the air, if I spent 10 days in prison, I don't know.
You ever been in jail?
No. Is there a raid about to happen, you motherfuckers?
Well, that's about to change, Jim.
No. FBI! And Roger Stone is in front of him going,
and what
that's
we,
the guy who told
we,
me to lie.
And what we learned is that you shit yourself whether it happens at 6 o'clock in the morning or 6 o'clock in the afternoon.
That's probably a good way to wrap things up, right?
Yeah.
All right. So next week we're going to talk about our gifts from Cleveland Whiskey, because
I'm excited about
these. We got smoker bricks from Cleveland Whiskey. Steve and I both use smokers to cook. It's a little cold out right now, so that's not going to be happening soon. We got black cherry, we got hickory, black cherry, white oak, and
sugar maple.
So we will be cooking with our smoker bricks from Cleveland Whiskey as soon as reasonably possible.
And I'm interested because these are bricks, and these aren't, like, I normally use like a chip
right
form, and so I'm wondering.
Not only are they bricks, they're bricks that have whiskey soaked into them.
Yes.
And I opened one, so they're still wet.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. This is going to be interesting.
Oh, I could see the condensation on the inside. I can't wait because.
The plot thickens.
Yeah. I got a couple things. I mean, we were going through the Michael Simon book that you got from them, and I think that these would just make that prime rib on the smoker perfect.
I'm curious. Which one would you, of the four woods we have here, which one would you go with? Because I'm kind of concerned about that. Not like, you know, talk about first world problems. What wood am I going to use when I smoke my prime rib? But I don't want to put a prime rib in there with the wrong.
Yeah, I don't think any of these will hurt it. I could argue with the way that Michael Simon has suggested to season it. That you could probably,
which is a lot of horseradish for you.
Yeah, I mean, so part of me says to offset like some of the mustard, maybe with the sugar maple, or just go with the American white oak.
I think I'd go American white oak. Well, yeah. White oak the first time. All right, man. Good talk. We'll do this again soon.
All right.
Later.